Washington Wednesdays. Every Wednesday throughout the college football season.
And every Wednesday, of course, we preview what's going on in the Pac-12 and also with Washington when, of course, they get the victory. And joining us right now in the Venue Kings hotline, Evan Moore from the Pac-12 Network, a former Stanford tight end who played both in three spots, Cleveland, Seattle, Green Bay Packers. And so, Evan, interesting start to this Pac-12 season. What's kind of caught your eye so far?
John, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. There's been a lot of activity so far, that's for sure. I think this past weekend, as good as the matchup was between USC and Stanford, I think the thing that jumped out for me the most was the non-conference wins that this conference was able to put together this week, with Colorado going into Nebraska and getting a win, and also ASU able to beat Michigan State at home. I thought those were two really quality wins. I think over time, we'll get a better sense of just how big those wins are with how Nebraska and Michigan State fare over the rest of the season. But those were big wins. And secondly, I think the top of the conference, so to speak, is still intact. You have Stanford, the top 10 of the AP poll now, and Washington just behind them with one quality loss so far. And I'm anxious to see how things continue to stack up as we move forward.
Well, the thing I found to be very curious is that how can UW drop down? And I know that it wasn't an impressive performance, but 45-3 is a pretty good blowout, and they lose a little bit in the rankings. And I know that Chris Peterson wasn't happy about the offense, and he scored 45 points.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting because I think most people walk away, even the Huskies themselves walk away from that game thinking it was somewhat of a subpar offensive performance. However, Browning still had his first 300-yard game since the Utah win last year. But I think the thing that jumps out about their performance is it was a little sluggish to start. I know going into halftime, I don't remember the exact score at halftime, but it was still relatively close. And they've yet to really get the running game going. It's been a big surprise. And I think to a certain extent you sort of expected that against Auburn, given the defensive front that Auburn is working with. But the inability to do it regularly against North Dakota was a little bit concerning, because most of the rushing yards they were actually able to put together in that game came in the fourth quarter, like in quote-unquote garbage time. So when it matters the most, this is a team that really has not been able to run the ball that well. And I think from an eye test standpoint, which usually plays into the AP rankings, they just, you're coming off the loss to Auburn and then kind of being a little bit sluggish against North Dakota. I think that's why you see them fall just a little. Now, I think we all have to remind ourselves this time of year, after two games, it's largely meaningless, because the reality is all the opportunity they have to win this conference is still right there in front of them, and there's a lot of football left to be played.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it a slow start last year for the Huskies with the running game? And isn't that a kind of a byproduct? We see it in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, it's like you don't have the ability to have game speed in any of the training before the season. Yep. And so now it takes a couple of weeks to get going.
That's a really good point. And that's totally fair. It's they did start slow last year. And I think they'll continue to figure out the right mix between Miles Gaskin and Savon Achman. I think Savon Achman's a guy around the conference that we all feel has loads of talent. Now, Miles Gaskin deserves, all the carries he can get, over 20, I would say, per game. But they need to continue to find ways to get Savon Achman in the mix, because I think he's a special player out of the backfield. And the thing we can't forget, too, is them being banged up front. Obviously, losing Trey Adams is detrimental to what they're doing. And I think it's affected their ability to run the ball consistently. And it also affected their ability to protect in the Auburn game as well. So you're right. It takes time. We're two games in. We don't want to draw too many crazy conclusions, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah, no doubt. What's happened to Arizona? Boy, that team, they looked terrible the other day.
Yeah, it's puzzling. It really is. Like, I think a lot of people have heard the stat that when Khalil Tate throws the ball more than 18 times in a game, in all of his career starts dating back to, early last season, they're 0-6 as a team. So, some of that is skewed a little bit because most of his starts were in Rich Rodriguez's offense, which was relied heavily on what they do with his legs. But if I could move on from Khalil for 1 minute, I'll comment on their defense. Yeah. It's been a little disappointing to see in their third year under Marcel Yates, their defensive coordinator, them to really take a step back on defense. Up front, they had some really tough linebackers last year with Colin Schooler and Tony Fields. And in my mind, Colin Schooler is really the only one that has brought that same energy and intensity this season. We expected them to be a little bit bigger on the defensive front as well this year, and I don't think that size has translated to stops. So I think defensively, in and out, that their offense is helping them out all that much. But for them to be down 31-0 to Houston at halftime speaks volumes to all elements of the game. But defensively has been disappointing. And with Khalil, I think it's all about them just trying to figure out the best way to use him. Because right now, what I see is their offensive coordinator, Noel Mazzone, what I see is an offense that he's running that kind of resembles what he did when Josh Rosen was a freshman at UCLA. He was the offensive coordinator there at that time. And this offense looks almost identical to that. But the issue is you don't have Rosen. You have Khalil Tate. Now, Khalil's special, but he has a different skill set. And so I'd like to see them try to find a way to execute that skill set a little bit better, because I think so far they've been asking a little too much of his arm. And I'm not even sure they have the receivers to carry out that kind of offense that they're asking them to do. I mean, I think he threw it like 45 times. I mean, that's just – and I know they're down. I get that. When you're down – when you're that far behind, you got to throw the ball a ton. But – from the get-go, they have to find a way to use his legs a little more, him and J.J. Taylor out of the backfield, and use a little more deception and play action to get the ball down the field.
Yeah, that was very bizarre to kind of see that going. Is there a surprise team right now that you've seen so far in the Pac-12?
I think without question, the two surprise teams, I got two in my mind, is Colorado and Arizona State. And I think Colorado, we've known for a while that Steven Montez is their quarterback, is a talented player, but he was very mistake-prone last year, a lot of mental errors, and his accuracy had fallen off a little bit. He's been improved in all those areas this year, but the biggest surprise on that team is Laviska Shenault, the kid that has over 10 catches a game and is almost at about 200 yards a game receiving as well over his first two games. I mean, the kid is a star. He just blows me away on film with how much he flashes and the plays that he's making. And so that will he be able to sustain it? I don't know. But it's been nothing short of unbelievable what that guy's been able to do so far. And then on the other side of things is Arizona State. I think a lot of people had questions about the Herm Edwards hire. I never really saw it as an experiment, so to speak. I just thought that, you know, the guy's a ball coach, and I thought it just might take time for him to get his recruits in there and to get the right staff in place to turn things around there. And not surprisingly, to be honest with you, he's made the most of what he has. Danny Gonzalez, his defensive coordinator from San Diego State, I think he runs a system that can offset some talent deficiencies. As you've seen at San Diego State, they compete with high-level Power 5 teams on a regular basis, a lot of times because of what they do schematically on defense. And so seeing Danny Gonzalez do that so far really has not been all that surprising. And then we probably don't give Manny Wilkins enough credit, their quarterback. He's a fifth-year senior. He's got a ton of experience. He's got two really good wide receivers he's working with. And Eno Benjamin, the running back, has stepped in nicely for the guys they lost last year. So this speaking specifically to Arizona State, this could be a team that is here to stay in a Pac-12 South that really is wide open, because we just don't know how good USC is at this point. They got a tough one coming up down at Texas this weekend, so it's going to be a fun division to watch.
Yeah, and of course, Washington State off to a 2-0 start. Thoughts on them?
Well, when I think of Gardner Minshew and throwing for over 400 yards this week, and I think over 350 in week one, if you're Mike Leach and you're recruiting a quarterback as a grad transfer, I mean, is there a better recruiting pitch than, hey, come here and you'll throw for about 400 yards a game? And I realize they run something a little different than most. Their air raid offense is pretty unconventional. It's very pass heavy, and you know that kind of can inflate guys' stats, as we saw with Luke Falk over the course of his career. But it's just incredible to me that, you know, they had a lot of quarterback uncertainty over the course of the offseason. They had two guys competing because Minshew wasn't even there yet. And yet you get the sense from Washington State that the last thing they were concerned about was quarterback. And that's because Mike Leach gets those guys in there. He gets them dialed in. He keeps it really simple for them. He lets them chuck it around. And they always have playmakers at receiver. They got seven or eight guys to throw to. They have a really good running back in James Williams and also Max Borgi, the freshman, and just a number of guys that can catch the ball. And it's fun to watch, man, because it doesn't matter who they insert into that system, the guy thrives. And I expect Gardner to probably have 3,500, 4,000 yards this year. And that's after not even being there in the spring. It's pretty amazing.
So, that is amazing. And that's Mike Leach.
Surprisingly, too, their defense has been better than most people expected. That's been, you know, Tracy Clays, their defensive coordinator, has had his work cut out for him because they lost a lot of talent from last year on defense. And they haven't played any stiff competition yet, but they've gotten the job done on D, and that's been encouraging.
Hey, Evan Moore, as always, great stuff, and thanks for joining us. Evan Moore from the Pac-12 Network.
All right, John, thank you.
Okay, he's joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show, 710 Sports App, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will now take your report card and grade what's going on in sports. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, first up here, Professor, I thought this one was a little bit embarrassing, for this poor Georgia State football coach, Sean Elliott. He suffered a torn right bicep muscle while celebrating a touchdown last week in their game against NC State. He was celebrating for their first touchdown of the game in the first quarter, which was an 8-yard run. And apparently he said the fist bump during the ensuing celebration caused the injury. But the thing is that his team ended up losing 41-7, and that was the only score of the game.
Oh, wow. That's pretty bad. How do you get injured on a fist bump?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. I mean, you must be really
weak. It's an aggressive
weak.
Fist bump.
I mean, I know I was on the sidelines, and Marquette King came over to me and gave me a fist bump and applauded me on the commercial for ESPN. And so that was kind of nice, but my hand came out of it fine. I didn't have any real problem. And you're celebrating a touch, and you get a fist bump injury? Well, that's a D. I mean, you know, you got to be tougher than that. I mean, it's like, and again, I know there's players that do get injured. I mean, usually there's about two or three a year in the National Football League that'll get some kind of an injury on a celebration, but you can't do that because you can. And how bad was the injury? How long is it going to be out?
He's having surgery on a torn
bicep. On a fist bump on a touchdown?
Yep, torn bicep.
Torn. That's unbelievable. Man, I tell you what, I mean, what they've got to do is get the player that he had the fist bump with and get him to play more because, I mean, this guy must be pretty strong.
Yeah. That's a good point.
That's amazing.
I was more focused on the fact that you have an injury that you need a surgery for celebrating a touchdown and a 41-7 loss. But you're right. It's the fist bump part of it's pretty crazy as well.
That is bad. That is really, really bad.
Well, next up, we had Aaron Rodgers was on with Stu Gotts and Dan Lebatard on ESPN Radio yesterday, and he decided to kind of take a jab at the fantasy football players when they asked him if he's going to start this week.
Big Aaron, oh, are you playing? Are you playing? Is your knee okay? Are you going
to
play?
No, please.
Vikings.
You're on my fantasy team. I need to know.
We can't do any. I can't give out fantasy help like that.
No.
See, there it is. You got your sound, ESPN.
But Aaron, you said after the game that you were going to play next week, and now I'm reading reports that you might not play, and I have you down as probable. So what's the deal here?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of experts out there who are, you know, forecasting things, but we're taking it to one day at a time.
See how you ruined the interview, ESPN? You see, they wanted to get in here and ask him the football question. What does he do? He gives us the first cliche at the end. Get out of here, Rodgers.
Can you play, please?
No. One day at a time.
All right, get out of here. One day at a time. Yeah. Unbelievable, man.
Don't you love Aaron Rodgers? I really do. I still remember talking to him. And by the way, I'm giving a C to Stu Gotts in the group, and I'll give an A to Aaron Rodgers for just playing around. But I still remember one of the stories that he told me. It's like I said, well, you know, how were you when you were in college and showed leadership? He says, well, listen, I was a 17, 18-year-old guy on a junior college team. We had guys that were 28, 29 years old, some of those guys who had been in prison and all that stuff. If I didn't show leadership immediately, I was going to get run over by this team. And so that gave him the ability when he was very young in junior college to be able to be a leader on the team when guys were like 8 to 10 years older than him and had criminal records. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, he's definitely had quite the path to get to where he is, because sitting for a long time after, you know, Brett Favre kept coming in and out of retirement as well. But I think after last week, everyone's pretty certain that he's right up there with Brady.
And I do think he's going to play. Hey, if Russell Wilson's playing, so is Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Well, we have one more cut from that interview that was pretty good. Danica Patrick grew up a Bears fan. Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend. So they asked him about meeting her dad, knowing that he's a Bears fan.
How awkward is it meeting Danica Patrick's dad when he's a Bears fan?
It wasn't. It wasn't. I think he's he's gonna jump on board at some point.
No, he's not.
He is not. You stole his soul. Do you call him? Do you call him and leave a funny voicemail message saying, "Man, did you see what I did to your team this weekend? Did you see that on one leg?"
Hey, look, he knows, you know, if you want to come watch a game, you can only come if you're cheering for the green and gold.
Wow. Pretty good stuff. So we'll give a B. And don't you love the fact that Dan and Stu Gotts and them are going to challenge guys on interviews and stuff like that? I think that's what makes their show so good.
Yeah, that was some pretty good stuff. He tried to He tried to just laugh it off at first, but then you can tell he's pretty competitive. I don't think he'd appreciate it if his girlfriend's dad was rooting for the Bears.
No, that's not going to go over too well. I mean, that's one that obviously has to be fixed. But kind of fun to see that. Good stuff there.
Yeah. Last up here, we have Chris Carter on his show, First Things First, with Nick Wright, talking about some of the Belichick disciples, specifically Vrabel and Patricia, and how he talked to some of the Titans players about Vrabel. He's trying to figure out why this coaching tree doesn't seem to work.
Players, Delanie Walker, I sat down and talked with him, loved it. Said it's one of the best coaching philosophies. The players love being with Vrabel because every day, if you did what you were supposed to do and put the type of effort in, he responded by giving you a great deal of respect. This is what the guys who leave New England, they miss. The respect factor from pro players doesn't go to them assistant coaches unless you give the pro players respect. So when you come in with that condescending attitude, like Bill Belichick, without the resume and the trophies, the NFL players have not responded, and we have seen ugly results everywhere all these disciples have gone. Now, I'm glad I was in Miami to talk to the Tennessee players, because I was able to get the difference in the coaching approach and how the veteran players have responded. But this is something that you must continue to watch, because those players don't have long-term guaranteed contract. That coach does.
Pretty interesting. So I take it that he's I think 1 week is way too early to throw a coach under the bus and say that, hey, it looks like, all these guys, Vrabel can't coach because he lost the game. And we all know that Pat Patricia had a real bad game to start things off. So I'm going to kind of give, a B minus to Chris on this one, maybe a C. Okay, let's give him a C, because I think that, I'm going to give at least give some time. But there's no doubt Matt Patricia had one of the worst starts you can, and just because he's a former Belichick coach, I mean, somebody's going to succeed as a Belichick coach at some point, don't you think?
I think he has a good point there. I think we both heard things, because I used to work in Denver, about McDaniels not really having a lot of respect for people, and I think coming in with what Chris Carter described as that, like, Belichick kind of attitude, and I think you he's right. You can't start that way right off the bat. Belichick had to earn that. Mm-hmm. And that's why maybe things will work out differently for Vrabel, because he was an actual player and he didn't turn into a coach till later.
Right. Yeah. All I know is that, say what you want, Joshy Boy McDaniels was terrible. I mean, he was awful.
Oh, I know your feelings on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, and then what he
you're
did
very
to,
clear.
What he did to Chris Ballard and the Indianapolis Colts to get a 5-year $20 million contract, that was savage. Because, what he did to all the assistant coaches who agreed to come up and be with him, that was just awful. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text question, 710-710, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, we take your text questions every day at this time. You can text us at 710-710. And so what seems to be on everybody's mind today?
Well, Professor, up first, the 425 wants to know, who will see more time at receiver on Sunday, C.J. Procise or Keenan Reynolds?
Well, I don't know if they're definitely going to move C.J. Procise to wide receiver. I mean, he's going to be out there on the passing downs. And, Reynolds, I think, Procise will get more playing time than Reynolds, because, Reynolds will now go in as the fifth wide receiver, and we'll see how they mix it in. Now, will they put him in the slot a little bit? Maybe for a few plays, but I think that Procise is going to be on the field more. If they need to, they can get Procise out there, but I think that the idea was that they want Reynolds to come in and be kind of the emergency slot guy if necessary.
509 says, Professor, what do you see getting overhauled for the Mariners in 2019? Hitting, pitching, or a mix of both?
Mix of both, because I think that they still have to figure out, they need one more pitcher or two at least to start. They've got to really sort out some things in the bullpen, because a lot of the moves that Jerry Dipoto made for some of the veterans there have not really worked out as well. So they've got to sort that out. But the big thing is, a team that was supposed to score 4.7, 4.8 runs a game is only scoring in the low fours, and that's got to be fixed. And so why it didn't work? Because, I mean, you look at the pieces and you can see, they've added some all-stars. I mean, three all-stars that have been added here in the last year. Unfortunately for the Mariners, I mean, the hitting just hasn't been there, and they got to find a way to make it better.
425 says, this is not intended to be smart alecky. Was Jermaine Ifedi so bad at guard in his rookie year there that they determined he can just never, ever play guard?
No, I think that I think he's done better at guard than he has at tackle. I mean, he wasn't that bad that first year, and so maybe putting him out on an island at tackle. Now, I know right tackle is not the same island as left tackle, may have been difficult. And to think that he's a little bit better according to Pete Carroll, but still there's a lot of work that he needs. And the idea could be if necessary put him back at guard, but the tackle thing has not worked out that well.
The 206 says, do you think Ryan Fitzpatrick will be the starter from now on?
No, I think at some point they're going to go back to Jameis Winston. I mean, the debate's going to be how they come out of those first three games. Now, obviously, when he puts 48 points on the Saints on the road, that probably buys him into the fourth game. Because remember, when they gave him the start, they didn't guarantee that Winston was going to come back. But Winston's the more talented quarterback. I think if Ryan has a hot hand, they'll keep him in. If he slows down, then they'll go to Winston in game four.
360 says, should the NFL go to Kansas City tiebreaker rules for overtime? Nobody likes a tie.
No, I don't like ties either. I mean, I think I did not like the idea of shortening the overtime to 10 minutes because now you saw the result. It got a tie. Ties are bad. But to change the rule and go to a college rule, I don't like that. I still think that what they need to do is not have sudden death into an extra overtime period or anything like that. But, I still think that they tried to appease and say, okay, first possession, if you get the field goal, and now the other team has a chance to come back and you have to get the touchdown to do that. I think they've played with it a little bit too many times. And again, it's not as bad as I thought it would be, but still, ties are bad.
All right, the 206 wants to know, John, do you think that Peterson will make a quarterback change if Browning continues to struggle?
I think that's several weeks down the line. Remember, this is a team still trying to fight to get into the national championship, and they had one loss. But, if he does, I mean, I think that would be many weeks away. Is it out of the question? No, because he's going to try to do the best thing that he can to get this team to win. But, I think still, because he stayed the senior year, he was wise to stay in the senior year, they're going to stay by Jake Browning.
425 wants to know who you think will lead the Seahawks in targets on Monday, Lockett, Marshall, or Disley?
I think it'll probably be Lockett. I mean, Disley, as good as he was with the 105 yards, what was he only targeted about five times, maybe six at the most? But I think Lockett probably gets the most attempts. But that's the one thing. It's like it's not going to be like it has been where Baldwin's going to get significantly more targets than anybody else. I mean, they still have to find who really is the number one.
206 says, John, do you think John Ross will have a good game against the Ravens this week?
I think he will because, I mean, they don't have Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith, of course, is on a four-game suspension, so they're a little bit more vulnerable at the cornerback position, so I think that he has a chance to do well. Still think the Ravens win because I think the Ravens are the better team, but I think Ross could have a pretty good game.
The 206 says, what is Cam Chancellor doing now?
I don't know because, again, it's like you saw his post yesterday, and I haven't really seen it closely. We discussed it earlier. He says something's coming up as far as some kind of announcement, but, again, it's not a matter that's going to change the equation as far as playing because right now he's on the PUP reserve list, and he's out for the rest of the season. So stay tuned on that front.
The 253 wants to know if you think Todd Gurley will lead the league in rushing, and they said, P.S., shout out to J-Slam, so thank you for that.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I think he's my leading candidate, particularly now that Le'Veon Bell is making the suicidal mistake of not coming in and getting yards and collecting money and all that different stuff. So, no, I think Gurley technically is the best back in the league.
509 says, JC, do you see Jordan Roos moving up at some point this season?
I definitely think so. I mean, again, an injury will happen and it'll get him a chance to be out there. That's why he was one of the first guys they got back on the practice squad. He's a good player. I know they like him, and if they need him, they'll pull him up.
509 says, after Monday's game, whose performance will have been greater, Mac or Wilson?
You mean this week? I think I'm going to lean toward Wilson because I think it's going to be a bounce back game. Mac's going to have probably a pretty good game because he's a great, great player. But I think this is one where Wilson will step up. He'll cut down on some of the mistakes. I mean, he did a lot of good things on Sunday. It just wasn't good enough to win.
509 says, JC Penny, does Carson see 20 plus carries Monday?
I doubt it. Because I don't think that, really, when you think about it, you really don't want to have too many backs in the first couple weeks of the season overdo it. And so I think he's going to be more 15 or 16.
All right. The 206 wants to know, would you play Deion Lewis versus Houston or Devontae Freeman versus Carolina this week?
You say Devontae Freeman. I go with Devontae Freeman. I mean, although the thing is like, when is Steve Sarkisian going to get the running game going? You know, in the case of Deion.
When is he
going
to get fired?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I hate to see that because I like Sark. But again, it's like he has not gotten anything out of the running game in the 17 regular seasons he's been calling plays. And so, you know, that I think puts a little caveat on there. You know, Deion Lewis is not the main ball carry and ball hawk back. I know that, you know, Derrick Henry didn't have a great opening game, but of course that means limited carries for Deion, so I would lean toward Devontae Freeman. Sounds like a fantasy question, by the way.
Yes. Well, they snuck one in there. We don't usually do those for you. The 425 says, do you really see Rodgers playing one leg against the Vikings defense?
Oh, did you see Russell Wilson do the same thing with a worse injury? Yeah. I don't see that. I think he's going to play. I don't see, again, you know, he's tough, and he'll find a way to make it work. And you saw, I mean, let's put it this way. Didn't he play in the second half and play the entire second half and put 24 points on the board? Yes, he did.
Sorry, I lost our music there. The 360 says, if the Raiders can't put a good product on the field in Vegas, how soon will people say they should not have moved there?
Never. I think that Vegas is welcoming the chance for the Raiders to be in town. And so, you know, one season and one bad start is not going to change it. And remember, you know, John Gruden has a 10-year contract, so he has some time to get this team out of a slow start.
425 says, is the Denver back that good, or did the Hawks do that bad on defense last week?
They missed tackles. I mean, the back is good because he's a good physical type of runner. But, you know, the one that was kind of interesting was Lindsey out there, the fastback. And that's where, I mean, that really kind of caught them cold with how fast he was able to get.
Yeah, everyone thought Royce Freeman was going to be the one they'd have an issue with.
Well, Royce Freeman is, you know, is good. You saw him come on at the end of the game, but he's still their starting back. But they've got a good 1-2 combination with two rookies, Lindsey, who's undrafted, and, of course, Freeman, who looks pretty good.
425 says, are the Cowboys in trouble, or will they bounce back and make the playoffs?
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, even if they won that first game. So I think they'll bounce back, but I'm not of the vein that says they're a playoff team.
360 says, is the Jets defense for real?
I think there's a chance. I mean, still not sold on the defensive line. Still have a couple holes at the linebacking core. Really like their secondary, but let's not overjudge it. I mean, it's easy to have a game like they did against Detroit if indeed they knew what the plays were from what they saw.
206 wants to know if you think teams are going to realize Will Dissly is a threat and shut him down this season, or if he will keep producing at a high level.
Well, I mean, let's not go overboard right now. He had a great game, and I think he's going to be a real good tight end, but technically he's still not the starter. I mean, you've got when Ed Dixon comes back, he's going to be the starter. Nick Bennett is the number one guy now, but you know, it was a good start, but let's not jump to too many conclusions on that yet. Dissly's going to be the guy for the long term, but again, technically he's not the starter.
253 wants to know if you think the Chiefs can win the AFC West this year.
I didn't going into the first game. I thought it was going to be the Chargers. I changed my mind. I think the Chiefs can, because you saw a much improved Patrick Mahomes, a guy that I thought was going to take most of the season to start getting good. I mean, he starts off with 4 touchdown passes. I'm in their corner right now.
We talked about the overtime rules earlier. 253 wants to know what you think of doing a field goal kickoff for a second overtime.
I don't like it. I mean, play football. Let's not make it some kind of a, you know, punt, pass, and kick game. Let's play some football. Again, I still like that it's like, okay, first team scores, you win. I don't care if it's a field goal. I don't care if it's a touchdown. First team scores is a win. Then people started complaining, well, gee, then whoever wins the coin toss has such an advantage. Hey, you want to eliminate the tie. Well, now to give the 2 possessions on a field goal or whatever, then, you know, eats up, you know, 8-9 minutes of the time. No, I think that just play football. First team that scores wins.
All right, that's it for Texas today.
Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's Dave Crosby.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, another loss to a bad team, 2-1 loss to the San Diego Padres.
In front of friends and family.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the crowds now start to dissipate. I mean, you know, it's looking done. It looks like it's over.
Oh, it's over, John.
Yeah.
It's over. I mean, miracles have happened. You can look at recent baseball history. I think it was Baltimore or Toronto or one of those teams that made a great run on Boston. The Mariners' situation was basically to be within 3 or 4 games of the A's when you play them in the last week of the season. That doesn't seem very likely now. What are they, 8.5, 9.5 behind them now? It's going to be a year where they have a winning record in all likelihood, but ultimately very, very disappointing. I mean, it's progress, but it doesn't feel like it. I mean, you were 24 games over 500. Remember, this was without Robinson Cano. You had your great run without Robinson Cano, so I don't just put it on that. And you just weren't able to keep it going. You know, we talked about your love of numbers. We've talked about it a lot, and in this case, the stats didn't lie. That run differential thing that was, you know, when the Mariners were 24 over 500, the run differential was like plus five or something like that, which was more like a 500 team. And that came around to get them, I guess, at the end, because that's how they're playing right now. Basically,
minus
like a
52 right now. Minus 52.
Yeah. It's just when you thought you had it set and you don't, it makes it real tough. I mean, you know, then they got big questions in the offseason, and it's already time to think about that stuff to a degree.
So what type of things do you think they're going to need to do? Because I mean,
well, the first thing they got to figure out is Felix Hernandez. Mm-hmm. I mean, they owe him $27.5 million no matter what. They owe him that money. But they got to figure out if he even fits. You know, the story that came out yesterday about him. And I look, I mean, it would have been a big deal if he had taken a leave of absence, if he had pulled what I would call a diva move. He did not. It's certainly understandable for a veteran like that to think it and to be upset about things. But the fact of the matter is, for the most part this year, he's been healthy. And he said the last 2 years he hadn't been healthy. And he had his worst season by a mile. I mean, his ERA is well over five. You know, is he going to be part of your rotation next year? Are you going to go in? Is he going to pitch the opening day again next year? What do you do with him? You can't trade him. You can cut him. You're going to have to pay him no matter what. So that doesn't make any difference there. It's not, and there's no salary cap to worry about or anything like that. But you got to figure out what you're doing with him. You got to figure out what the rest of your pitching staff is. I mean, James Paxton took a step, I suppose, but you know, he still battled with injuries. Hasn't quite been the ace that you know. I still think he might be wrestling with something. Hasn't quite been the ace that he looked to be at the start of the year. Marco Gonzalez looked good last night, so he's definitely a piece moving forward. But you know, Mike Leake is what 8-9, 9-9 with an ERA well over four. You know, he's a back end of the rotation piece. Erasmo Ramirez is the same thing. So you've got pitching issues, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Nelson Cruz. I would assume that you're going to try and re-sign him, and he seems happy here, and 2-year deal would be in order. But then, you know, what about the Robinson Cano and D. Gordon situation? I mean, how are you going to figure that out? So they got a lot to do in the offseason.
Yeah, really, and it's been so disappointing, and this, of course, being the worst tease of all, to be 24, 25 games above 500, 11.5 ahead of the A's as far as the wild card. Everything looks wrapped up, and here it is, you know, at the end of the year, not even going to have meaningful games against the Oakland A's.
Well, you got to think about who you were. What team are you? Are you the team that was 24 over 500 and can build on that? Are you the team that's been playing the rest of the way, which doesn't look that way at all? It's a tough situation to be in for sure.
Yeah, it really has, and it's just you just scratch your head and say, where did it all go wrong?
I tend to think that they weren't that good to begin with, John. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day that this was a team that I mean, they were better than I thought they'd be. I predicted them to have a losing record, but that they look at their rotation, they were about a 500 club, maybe a little bit better, and that's kind of how they've played I've played under 500 for the last month and a half or so, but. But they're going to wind up probably about 8 or 9 games over 500 for the year, which is, you know, overachieving to a degree, in my opinion. But, you know, that they've got some good young talent. They got some pieces for sure. Mitch Haniger is a great story coming out. Gene Segura is a great story coming out. I mean, Kyle Seager is another guy you got to figure out what you're going to do with. You know, he's had really two back-to-back not great seasons this year, in particular at the plate, really struggling. Mike Zunino. I mean, do you move forward with him? He does such a good job catching, but he's hitting 190. I mean, how many of those bats can you carry? So I think that they probably weren't as good as they seem to be, but that doesn't change the disappointment for sure.
No, because I was big on the run differential because, you know, when you start talking when they're, you know, 25, 24 games above 500 and they're like plus 20, it's like they're playing like an 83-win team, and now you can see that that minus 52, it was kind of like that 78 wins that we both thought it was going to be at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, kind of. So it's – and then, you know, I mean, you know, part of the gig, too, is getting people excited and – you know, they announced 13,000 last night. There was not 13,000 at that game last night.
No, not at all.
They really have not been able to capture the public's imagination, although overall their attendance is going to be okay. It really is disappointing that it ended so quickly and that the A's were able to, you know, the A's give them credit. They got hot and they stayed hot. But if the Mariners had played just 500 ball, they'd be right in it with them. They'd be just a couple of games back, and that series would matter towards the end of the year. And as you pointed out, now it probably does not.
Well, and then the sad part about the whole thing, too, is that now you've got the Astros as still a great team that's young, and now you've got the A's as a very good team that's young. And so you go into this offseason realizing, hey, you're third best.
Well, and you're really more worried about the Angels, who are a team that will spend money. The A's will lose some of their players because they won't spend money, but they tend to just pop for a year at a time. But you're right, they've got some good young players, and that's, you know, an important thing for the Mariners to start building on, is trying to get some of those good young players, which they don't really have.
Not good at all. So now on the football front, what thoughts do you have now? What did the Seahawks try to do with no Doug Baldwin on offense?
I think it's a real big blow. I think that he's been Russell Wilson's security blanket for a long, long time. He's beyond that. He's been the top receiver for the last 4 years. He's played every game, basically. He's absolutely someone you can rely on. Now, all of a sudden, that's Tyler Lockett. Is he up to being the number one receiver? Brandon Marshall, who's still getting in shape, is he up to be the number two receiver? I heard guys say it about Will Disley, who had a great debut for sure. But, man, let's not put ridiculous expectations on this guy. He had a great start, and that was terrific. But, you know, I think it's a big blow, and I'm concerned about this game against the Bears. You know, the Bears and against the Seahawks defense, the Bears showed a lot of creativity on offense against the Packers, a lot of creativity, especially in that first half. And they're not an elite team, but they're playing at home, and they're going to be excited about it. So I think this is a tough matchup.
Mm-hmm. But it's one that's almost a must win, because if you lose these two games on the road, particularly, you know, teams that you go in thinking at the beginning of the offseason, it's like, okay, we can kind of win these games, and you go 0-2, then all of a sudden the thoughts of 8 or 9 wins can be very difficult.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, that's as good as I thought that could be. So, yeah, it will be difficult. But it's always a challenge to win on the road for sure, and we'll see what they can do. But I think losing Baldwin is a big blow, to get back to your original question.
Yeah. Who do you think does become the number one guy? Is it going to be Tyler Lockett?
How can it not be? I mean, is someone else going to come out of the ether? Is Jerron Brown, who was targeted twice, all of a sudden going to be the number one guy? I mean, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, familiarity we know is an important thing for him, and he has it with Tyler Lockett, so I would assume it's going to be Lockett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. So what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
No Tom.
No Tom?
Just Bob and Graz today.
Gee, what happened to Tom? Day off?
He's ill in a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit. We're going to preview the Huskies. We'll talk with the Utah guy who covers the Utah Utes, and he's their play-by-play guy. And also Mike Blowers is going to join us as well.
Well, that should be very good. And, of course, interesting to see college football season really moving in a good direction. What do you like so far of the Pac-12?
I think Stanford is really good, and I think they got the Heisman Trophy winner. And I think this Washington-Utah game is a pretty big game. I mean, Utah has got a very good defense, and they should really give Washington a test.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be great. So that's coming up next. It's Bob Graz and Tom. Our thanks to Maura Dooley for producing and doing everything on the show. We're going to be back tomorrow at 10. And, of course, we've got football tomorrow night. Bengals going against the Baltimore Ravens. That should be fun. And, of course, it's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.